Hello, everyone. It's 8 o'clock on the nose, Eastern Standard Time, I believe. I know. This is Bob Heisingen. Welcome. Welcome to my class on how to get your spouse to change, hopefully stop the affair, and rebuild your marriage. Let's do some housekeeping first. There's a chat area down at the bottom. If you click that little area, it opens up the chat area. Can you please type in there, yes, if you can hear me okay? Okay. Sam says yes, so Beth says yes, so I must be being heard. Now, if you can see my, I'm not sure if this is working on my end, but if you can see my webcam on the bottom left corner, can you also type in yes? Okay, good. Martin has a question already. Hi, Bob. My first question is, if bipolar and sex addiction, are present, we're scrolling fast here. When is it enough? Okay, good questions. That'll be covered, Martin, next Thursday, I believe. We're going to talk about change and deciding when enough is enough. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about how to get your spouse to change or maybe stop the affair quickly and rebuild your marriage. And we're going to be dealing here with I got to mute everybody. We're going to be dealing with this is going to be a basic introduction, and I'm going to talk about some key principles. Okay, I'm not going to get into a lot of strategies or tactics, but I want you to have a good idea of some real basic information and key principles about infidelity and why infidelity happens. And if you can get that in your mind, and my thinking about infidelity and affairs is quite different than mainstream psychology or even sometimes marriage and family therapists. And my experience is that once people begin to understand why this happened and what's going on, man, you feel a tremendous sense of relief, a tremendous sense of relief. And that's what I want for you. I want for you to, as we go through this, to understand some basic ideas about infidelity, why it happens. And as that happens, I want you to take a deep breath and say, wow, I feel a little bit better right now, at least. Okay, is that a deal? Is that a deal with everyone? Mary says, can access chat. Okay. All right. We're doing okay. We're doing okay here. Okay. Sam, thanks for your smile. I appreciate it. All right. I also sent out to you a scorecard. Where's my scorecard? Right here. And I like lists. And sometimes lists are really, really helpful to put things in perspective. So here are some things, some results that most people want when they bump into infidelity. They want the affair to stop. They want an apology. They want to be free from the images and thoughts. That can be a big one. Okay. Here's another one. I accept my spouse's behavior as belonging to him or her. This is really, really important. It's something we're going to talk about tonight. My fears and anger are replaced with calm and confidence. We have committed to build a new marriage. Maybe that's part of your situation. Maybe it isn't. I have committed to building a new life. I'm confident I will make it with or without my spouse. And this is often a powerful, not only thing to think, but something to share at some level, at some point. And we'll talk about that later, perhaps next week or following weeks. I can state my position with power. Huge, huge, huge. I think and reflect before I speak or act. Another huge thing. And we're going to talk about that tonight. I have a well thought out plan to address the affair. And this is where the seven types of affairs come in. Our time together is tension-free. This is huge. Love is the absence of tension, I believe. That's the thought I have. Our children are not caught in the middle. If you have children, you don't want them in the middle because if they're in the middle, they're going to hurt. okay? And we speak the truth, no more lies and deceit. Okay, so I just sent that out to you about an hour ago. Can you give me some input on that? Are there any other results that you're looking for here? Can you type that in the chat area? Any other results that you're looking for? Dana says, how about prostitutes? We'll perhaps get it. We'll touch a little bit on some of that. False reconciliation. Okay, Jane. Okay, any other regaining respect from my spouse? I want my spouse to feel better about himself. Okay, Sam, appreciate that. Mary, regained respect from my spouse. Okay, so you want to feel respect. I'm going to note these and maybe add them to the list. Wanting a commitment from my spouse to work on the marriage. Okay, do you think something like this is helpful? Give me some input here. You think something like feel valued again? Yep, forgiveness is an issue for me, Lori. Yeah, that's a big one. Is this worth it for me to put together something like this for you? Say yes or no. Maybe. Or I don't know. Yes. Okay. Got more yeses than noes. Sam, thanks. I think it's good to have this larger picture in mind. It really helps, especially when you're in the, you know, in the crapper here and everything seems bleak and out of touch. You can go back to this and you can have this next in a notebook or somewhere. And each week you can maybe go through this and mark where you fit on the scale. And after a while you see progress. The 1 to 10 scale is powerful because you want to be able to note progress. And that's something that the 1 to 10 scale does. Okay. We got a lot of questions here. Okay. We'll get to some questions, but this is important stuff that I want you to know too. Okay. So here's some three outcomes when the affair is brought out into the open. This is what happens when D-Day comes. Three things that I bump into with hundreds of couples, hundreds of people. Outcome number one is your cheating spouse feels badly and stops the affair and rebuilds. That's probably 10%, I'd say, of people I work with. Number two, your cheating spouse promises to stop the affair but doesn't, and the affair is on again, off again, on again, off again, on again, off again, and you don't know where in the heck you stand sometimes. I'd say that's about 60 to 70%, 50 to 70% people that I work with struggle with this confusion, dilemma, on again, off again. Or the third outcome is that the cheating spouse stops the affair but says, let's move on. This is probably 20% of what I bump into. The affair is out in the open, the affair stops, but the cheating partner says, let's move on. And that's awful. Many times for the betrayed spouse, it just leaves a terrible, terrible taste in your mouth, and you don't trust. I mean, so you did it once, you're going to do it again because you're just throwing this away. All right, so help me understand where you are with these outcomes. Can you put down in the chat area 1, 2, or 3? Do any of these apply to you? 2, 2, 2, 2, 1. 2, 2, yeah, I'm pretty right on target. All right, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3. Okay, again, I think those averages were pretty close. A lot of twos here. That can be really, things go on and on and drag on, and you don't know where you're standing. That's not very. Three. Okay, I hope not two. Okay, not fun. No. What is he? Okay. It's still. Okay. Okay. Mary says, no one, these matches my issue. He simply blames me and shows no remorse and threatens divorce. Okay. There's probably some other things going on there. Okay. Good. Thanks for your input. That's helpful for me. And we get an idea of what all of us in this group are working on. Maybe a little different scenario. A lot of people here at number 2 dealing with the confusion And a lot of what I read here is no remorse. Let's over with. It's done with. I stopped the affair. What more do you want? Let's move on. I don't want to hear anything. You can trust me. Believe me, it's not going to happen again. I learned my lesson. Let's move on. Okay. Yep. That's also part of it. Okay. What's your situation? We did that. Now, what I want to do is briefly go over the infidelity recovery overview, because what I'm going to do, at least I'm planning right now, is run a lot of these online courses which cover the different steps in recovery. Here's phase one, and this is covered in my Infidelity Recovery Center, basically. Phase one is you want short-term quick results, and you get short-term quick results. I teach this in the boot camp. By stop doing what you're doing. And there's a reason for that. We'll get into that. Refuse to pursue. That's a big one. And charge neutral, which is not in the boot camp, but it's in the quick marriage turnaround module in my marriage building class. Okay. Then once you have some success, you learn about and rethink infidelity. And you do this on your own. You try to figure out the type of affair, and you also begin to understand much more in depth. What I say is you begin to see through your spouse and the underlying behavior. That's really, really important. We're going to get into that, some of that tonight. And phase three is you free yourself to act decisively. And in the Infidelity Recovery Center, you have 16 different skills that you can apply, some of them to particular types of affairs, and then you begin to really take action. And then step four is you create trusting and loving relationship. This is basically my marriage building online course. You identify your goals, you speak your voice, you embrace the natural process of healing. And this is important. I don't think most of us understand how healing takes place. I got some ideas on that too. You begin to rethink love and marriage. What you learn about love and marriage in our world is pretty much not where I go. I have some different ideas about love and marriage. And I think they're right, because when you look around, how many happy couples do you see? Do people really know what love is? They throw the word around, but don't really know what love is or the purpose of a marriage. Purpose of a marriage is not to be happy, folks. We'll get into that later, but the purpose of the marriage is not to make you happy. All right? And then we learn to set love goals, which is really, really difficult, because most of us have been taught or have somehow absorbed the idea that our goals are kind of based on fear. So we want to set love goals and not fear-based goals. So this is the overall process I want you to be aware of quickly, okay? All right, so here we go into a basic principle about infidelity. And the major reason your spouse had an affair is that it has absolutely nothing to do with you. The major reason your spouse had an affair has absolutely nothing to do with you. Okay? And once you understand the truth about infidelity, once you understand the truth of this statement, you will feel infinitely better. Okay? Isn't this true that... remember D-Day? Remember what it was like when you discovered this? Okay. What went through your mind? Write down what went through your mind in the typing area or the chat area. What went through your mind when you would discover this? What went through your mind when you discovered the infidelity? How could this happen? Loss of everything, disbelief, incredible hurt, complete disbelief, nightmare came true. Absolute devastation. I knew it. Martin said, I knew it. Mm-hmm. Okay. What is it? What is she that I am not? Uh-huh. Okay. That's a huge one, Jen. What it basically triggers in us, I think, is something negative about ourselves. Why? Okay. Why is kind of an angry question. Why did this happen? Okay, so let's look then at the major reason why your spouse panicked, fear, disbelief, why comparison to her, devastated. Why wasn't I good enough? Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot of that underneath the surface when we find out what's wrong. What was wrong with me? You know, why? And it's, you know, it's something that you hear all over. You know, your friends or family may say, you know, what didn't you meet their needs? Couldn't you have done better? Why can't you keep your spouse? Sometimes you can go to therapy and the therapy says, well, what's the problem with the marriage? Okay. The problem is not with the marriage. The problem is with the person having the affair. And let's look at what happens here. Your partner, your spouse, had an affair when they hit the wall of what I call their familiar position. Their familiar position. And that is a thematic, often unconscious, automatic, negative way of thinking and feeling about oneself. So a familiar position is a theme in your life or in your spouse's life that's underneath the surface that carries with it a negative way of thinking and feeling about themselves. All right, let that sink in. This is a familiar position, and we all have one, okay? Very early in life, we deal with ways to cope with this familiar position. And these coping patterns then are taken into adulthood. When we grow up, okay, we're bombarded with fears. You know, we fear we're going to be abandoned. We fear we're not going to have enough. We fear we're not going to be loved. We fear we're not good enough. These are all negative thoughts and feelings that become part of our lives, and they're different for each of us. And when we have these negative feelings and thoughts, we have to deal with it somehow. So we find ways to cope with it, to cope with our fears, to cope with the fact that maybe we're not okay. And we learn ways to take care of that. We take that into adulthood. Now, these coping patterns may hold the familiar position in check for a period of time. Okay, so a person may try to cope with the factor and the feeling that they think they're not okay by pleasing others, by fighting, by being aggressive, by detaching or withdrawing, by seducing, by work or producing something, by fixing something, by taking care of something, helping, controlling, dominating, pleading helplessness, so on and so forth. Those are ways to cope with the negative feelings that we have with we have about ourselves. Hey, my guard dog is acting up here a little bit. Okay, does this make sense? You following me? Need a little feedback here. Yep. Okay, we're getting yeses. Any questions about this? Okay, no questions. Good. We'll maybe have some questions at the end then. Okay, now, here's something else important that you need to understand. Coping patterns may break down or prove ineffective at certain points in the evolution of your marriage and in the evolution of your family. The birth of a child is a crisis time. When your first child turns adolescent, it's a hugely difficult time for parents and for the family, for the marriage. Midlife, there's a lot written about that. Midlife is a crisis. Job business failure is often a crisis. An illness, a tragedy is a crisis, or retirement is a crisis. These are important times in life in which coping patterns may break down or prove ineffective. So these are prime times for infidelity. Prime times for infidelity. Matter of fact, I've run into the not so much birth of a child, but this is a big one right here, where the psychosexual development of the adolescent triggers in a parent their own lack of psychosexual development at that particular age. All right, do you follow that? That's a huge one. When I ask someone how old their children are, 12, 13, it gives me a clue then that the person who's cheating is dealing with some psychosexual development. Okay, or midlife, Here's another one. You know, the coping pattern is I'm going to play my role right. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to raise a great family. And when I do that, everything is going to be really, really wonderful. So the person reaches midlife and finds out that life isn't as wonderful as they thought it was, that they are feeling inadequate, that they're feeling angry, that they're feeling helpless, they're feeling impotent. And so how do they cope with that? They may go find a new model. Okay. They may find, you know, someone else to what they believe will help them with their feelings of impotency and inadequacy. Okay. All right, let's go on here. Does any of this correlate to your marriage or relationship? All right. Can you see, does this make sense to you? Okay. Do you have any questions about it? Midlife goals are not met exactly. Children and early teens, okay? Okay. These are ripe times for infidelity. What is midlife? I try to describe midlife. It may go from late 30s to mid-50s, where people find out that they're not being who they thought they were going to be. I can see a lot of insecurity in my spouse who's almost 70. Mm-hmm. I work with a lot of people who move into late life. Lost. You know, I'm growing old. I'm going to die, and I haven't felt what I thought I was going to feel. Martin, childhood trauma. That's another big one here. Childhood trauma, in terms of specifically sexual abuse or sexual confusion, often occurs, or an affair that attempts to cope with and deal with one's childhood sexual trauma often occurs when the oldest child turns early adolescent. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Okay. So here's what happens then. So rather than facing and resolving the familiar position, a person may look to an external object as a way to move away from the familiar position. So I feel my familiar position and it scares the bejeebies out of me, so I don't want to look at it. I don't want to go there. So I'll find something here that'll take away my pain, take away my fears. I'll hook up with another person and I'll medicate myself with alcohol, or work my tail off, or I'll socialize. I'll become focused on friends. I'll eat, I'll take pills, and so on and so forth. Okay, so infidelity is just one way that people try to cope with or move away from their familiar position. It's just one way. Your spouse could have chosen another way to run away from the familiar position. Huh? Does that make sense? Are you with me? Need some input? Okay. Okay. Yep. Okay. Now here's another thing. Your cheating spouse creates or perceives their world so that they continue to experience their familiar position. This is like we create the worst case scenarios in our life to match the worst case scenarios that we experienced before. So we tend to perceive the world around us in a negative way that reinforces our familiar position. Okay? So, you're cheating. Okay, we'll get into examples of that. Okay? Let's take the seven types of affairs here and look at the familiar position of each one. These are really general. Don't get too carried away with it, but maybe it helps you understand a little bit. In the affair number one, my marriage made me do it. The cheating spouse is often very dependent and feels helpless. That's the familiar position. I can't say no. This is an interesting one. Here's someone who seems really on top of things, narcissistic, entitled, cool, calm, and collected, but the underlying familiar position is I'm weak. I am weak. I don't want to say no. The underlying position here is I'm empty. There's nothing, absolutely nothing within me. So I need something out there. I need an object that I can really, really hang on to because I feel so damn empty. Okay. Fear number four, I fell out of love and just love being in love. This person basically feels really, really needy, really, really needy, and really doesn't have a clue of who they are. Fear number five, I want to get back at him or her. This person is just angry, just pissed off. This the underlying anger that is the familiar position. Fear number six, I need to prove my desirability. This makes sense. I feel pretty worthless. I'm not okay. I'm terribly, terribly inadequate. And fear number seven, I want to be close to someone but can't stand intimacy, is the familiar position is I'm torn or I'm confused. I don't know what I want, so I choose an affair that's perhaps a long-term affair that's a big secret, and I kind of lead two lives, one with my family and the other with my mistress. That's a man. Lori, can the affair be a combination of fair types, and does this make getting through it more difficult? Good question, Lori. Yes, there's often a combination here, and my take is the more confused you are, or the more overlap you see, the more likely it is that you're going to be able to move through this effectively and more quickly. Why? Because your spouse is not locked into a particular position. So the more flexibility is, the more flexibility that's there, the more the possibility that there's going to be healing. And we'll get into that next week when we talk about your spouse changing or not changing and what's up with that. Multiple types for multiple reasons, but again, not wanting to change. Okay, there may be more behind that. Maybe we can get into that later. So what does this mean for you? Is this helpful? Give me some feedback. Do you see your situation here at all? Okay. What about depression leading to these feelings? Depression may be maybe this one, number six, I need to prove my desirability. That's more the depressed kind of person. Again, I don't tend to use medical terms like that. I tend to look more at behaviors. Okay. Three or six, okay. All right, now, as you go through this, what do you notice in yourself about how you feel? You notice any change in your feelings or your thoughts as we go through and begin to examine in depth what's going on here? Disappointed? Okay. Any other feelings that you notice as you go through this? Okay. I'm just reading the... Okay. All right. All right, so it's stirring up some things. That's good. I want to stir some things up. And out of that, my theory is solutions are on the edge of confusion. So Missy says it feels empowering. Okay. All right, good, good. Okay, where was I here? Now, your spouse expects you to react to, here's another thing. Your spouse expects you to react to confirm their familiar position. Let's go back. This is about you, okay? My marriage made me do it. The familiar position is here. I'm helpless, okay? So your spouse expects you to be independent, to take care of him or her. I can't say no. this person feels weak, so your cheating spouse would expect you to be a caretaker, to take care of you, to get you help. I don't want to say no, person who feels empty. This person needs a mirror, somebody who will reflect back to them that they're not empty. They need you to be a trophy. Okay? I fell in love and just love being in love. This person feels really needy. So what do they want from you? How do they perceive you? They perceive you of giving them their needs met, right? I want to get back at him or her. This person's really, really angry. So what do they expect? Maybe they expect a fight. Maybe they want to fight with you. That would be something that would reinforce their anger. It's not very logical, but it happens all the time. I need to prove my desirability. I'm feeling worthless. So this person may want you to constantly reaffirm them or constantly tell them that they're okay. I want to be close to someone but can't stand intimacy. This person who is confused wants you to be what? Probably pretty stable. They want you to be really stable, hold things together so that they can feel torn and confused. Now, does this make sense? Give me some input here. Jen just had an aha moment. Yep. A lot. Good. Okay, so, yeah, okay. Definitely. So what do we do? That's the question. So what do we do? What you do then? Well, we went through here. Your spouse expects you to react to confirm their familiar position. We just went through that. Okay. What your spouse desperately needs you but won't admit it is expects you to fulfill your perceived role in their familiar position. Okay. Now this is really important. And I bump into this a lot. On one level, they expect you to fill your perceived role in their familiar position. That's what they, on one level, they want. On a deeper level, they really want to be loved. Okay? So you're playing up here and you're going to swirl. All right? You're going to swirl because you're kind of dancing around each other, filling the roles that you've always kind of filled to maintain those familiar positions. But here's they at a deeper level, they really, really want to be loved by you. I don't know how many times I've worked with couples who the cheating spouse at one level really knows that the affair relationship is temporary. They also know that it's not something that they really want, and they also know that they want it, they want their marriage, they want their family. But they just don't know how to get it. They just don't know how to move past their familiar position. Okay. So what you do is you stop playing the role that reinforces their familiar position. You stop reacting to them and you be a beacon of love. Now let's not go too far with this, okay? Because we really don't know what the word love means. You probably have some ideas in your head of what you need to do, but I want you to not go there too much because they're probably a little bit off, okay? We'll show you, we'll get a little bit later into what is really love and what you can do there. All right, any questions at this point? What is love really? Good question. I'll give five things later on that we could define as love. Any questions? What about when she doesn't want to do the work? Okay, what's her familiar position? We need to know what that is. Work on herself. Okay. She may be saying, I'm scared of what I might find. Or she may be saying, stop, stop telling me what to do. I'm going to do what I want to do. Or many women go back to, I don't want to go way back there. Many women struggle with this whole idea that I've given my life to my family and to my marriage, and now it's time for me. And what they're really saying is, I don't know who in the hell I am, and I need to find out who I am apart from being an appendage to my kids and my husband. That may be part of what's going on there. Again, there are numerous reasons for much of this. And the more that you know, the more distinctions you can make, the better off you're going to be in terms of communicating and getting to the core issue and solving the problem more quickly. When it is no longer healthy to continue doing the work alone. Okay, I'm going to talk about trying to work on the relationship. I got four things here pretty soon I'm going to talk about. Okay. Good. Anything else? Any other question? Okay. Five subtle but effective ways to bring about change with your spouse. Here we're talking about moving away from reacting. Okay, Jen said, I thought I was being stable number seven. What I'm doing is making it worse. Not making it worse, Jen. You're just kind of playing. You're kind of doing what he expects you to do. All right? And now that you know, you can make some changes and see what happens. Okay? So here's five subtle but effective ways to bring about change with your spouse. These are some acts that we could call acts of love. Move out of your role. Shift your focal point and control, usually from outside to inside. What I mean by that is that when you find out that your partner is cheating on you, your spouse is cheating on you, what does your focal point become? Somebody, what do you focus on when you find out? What did you focus on? Help me understand. Write that down, chat in the chat area. Your spouse, him, outside, yeah. Yeah, the other person, you focus on something outside yourself. You focus on your partner your spouse trying to get them to change, or you think about them 24/7, what took place, what they did. Your focal point is always outside, and what you do then is you revert back to some familiar roles for you that you've used before in the relationship, and you think they might work, but they probably won't. So you shift your focal point and control, usually from outside to inside, usually away from them to more your inside you, inside what you're thinking and what you're feeling. Back off. Refuse to be reactive. Your cheating spouse has relied upon you to react in predictable ways by approaching them and doing what you have consistently done to try and get something from them. So refuse to be reactive. Now that's scary for many, but it often has a powerful, powerful response. Express your voice, state your position, talk about resolution. This is hugely important. When I ask people, what do you really truly want to say to your cheating spouse? They often say, well, I want this marriage to work. There are some things I need from you. We can work on this together. We need to get counseling together. All of that becomes non-productive. And what you really want to do is you want to state your position. You want to express your voice. You want to say, this is who I am right now. And I do a lot of work on that in my coaching, and there's some things that we'll work on next week. Okay. Move from a fair thinking to recovery thinking. A fair thinking is, again, your external focal point, thinking about him and her, trying to figure out ways to fix this problem, trying to figure out what happened before, sitting down and wondering how you're going to approach this with your cheating spouse, so on and so forth. Move from that kind of thinking to recovery thinking. Recovery thinking is the purpose of this class, to get you to think about how you're going to recover. and reading a lot and learning a lot, and that becomes your focal point. I know this is easier said than done. Please understand. I understand that, but these are some general guidelines that I'm giving you right now. And overcome your isolation, and you're doing that right now because you're here. Most people, when they find out that their spouse is cheating, crawl into a corner, because really your friends, your family won't understand, or you don't want your family to take sides, or if you're afraid that if it gets out into the community that it's going to ruin everything. And so you isolate yourself and pull the cover over your head, and that's not very cool sometimes. Okay. So your assignment for the following week is just to notice. Just to notice and be aware of some of these things that we've talked about tonight, okay? And keep score. Go get your scorecard and play with that for the week. Next week, we're going to talk about three common barriers that knock you off the recovery road, understanding and using your pain in recovery, overcoming your isolation, how to powerfully and calmly confront your spouse with a can statement. I'm going to put words in your mouth. I'm going to give you a statement that that you can fill in some of the blanks with, but it will really help you state your voice. What it means if your spouse refuses to change, and three major keys to evaluate readiness to change. We're going to talk about a whole change issue tomorrow, next week, I'm sorry. Okay, one more thing I want to cover here. Do I share this with my spouse? Okay, some of you have kind of hinted at that. I'm going to tell you four times when you should not work on the relationship together, when you should just go your own way and figure out what your own voice is. Number one, if there's a high level of tension in the relationship, don't work on it. If one of you is actively pursuing and the other pulling away, don't work on it. If there is abuse in the relationship, don't work on it. If it's impossible to interrupt the negative cycles that we talked about, familiar position cycles, don't work on it. Okay. You can work on things or deal with your spouse later, but if you're going to work on it in particular situations like these, you're going to be reactive probably. It's just humanly impossible. Just humanly impossible. Be kind to yourself and know that it's going to be humanly impossible because your pain, your hurt is so deep, it's so profound that when you start doing this, it's you're going to just deepen that cycle of pain and hurt. So instead of doing this, take some time to do some recovery thinking rather than a fair thinking. Okay. Martin, repeat those four again. These four, Martin. Is that what you're referring to, Martin? Okay, if there's a high tension level, or if one of you, if you're pursuing, there's abuse, or if it's just impossible to interrupt the negative cycles. In other words, if you start a conversation, you know within 2 minutes it's going to go down the tubes. That's the cycle. Okay. All right, we've got a few minutes. I'll answer some questions because a lot of you have some questions and I want to get to those. I just don't want to blab on all night here. You have sex with a chronic cheating spouse. He has a need for sex and will go to counseling only if sex returns. Loretta, if you want to have sex, go ahead and have sex. Often what I find is that when you discover that your spouse is cheating, the sexual tension just goes through the roof. And many times couples have a real hard time keeping their hands off of each other because of the release of so much that it becomes very powerful. But again, if that's the case, you can use sex then not only to feel good, but to understand each other. And if you can talk about it, that's even better. Okay. My wife had a lesbian relationship for 8 months. Says she's not a lesbian. Thoughts? My thought is going back to her psychosexual development and the fact that she probably has some confusion about her sexuality and is trying to figure that out. And instead of looking at her familiar position or looking back at her history, she's acting it out rather than talking it through or working it through on her own. That's not uncommon. Developing our sexual identity is really a difficult and often painful, confusing time in our culture where we have some weird ideas about sex. How do you handle false reconciliation? False reconciliation. Jane says, okay, so Jane, I assume that I can assume things here. Jane, let me see. Jane, are you willing to be unmuted so we can talk about this? Jane L? Yes. Okay, Jane L. You are unmuted, Jane. Can you hear me? Jane, can you unmute yourself if you're muted?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. What do you mean false reconciliation?
My husband, on two separate occasions, once in December and once in March, told me he was ending the affair and that he wanted to work on our marriage. And each time he gave it 2 weeks, he never really cut off contact with her. There were still emails going back and forth. And at the end of 2 weeks, told me he had changed his mind and he was once again going back to her and it was too much work to work on our marriage.
Okay, what did that bring up in you?
Extreme pain and anger. And the second time it happened, I told him he doesn't get to break my heart again. And I ended contact with him for a very short period. And unfortunately, then he ended up in the hospital and my mom passed away and he's back in my life again. And we talk to each other every day.
Okay.
And I feel like now he's coming back toward me and I'm terrified that the same thing's going to happen again.
Okay. What is he learning?
That he can keep doing it.
Okay. What would you like to say to him?
I'd like to say to him that that he needs to end things with her if we have any chance at working things out.
You want to say to him, I don't want to share you with another person.
Right.
I refuse to share you with another person.
Yes.
Okay, what else would you like to say to him?
That after being married to him for almost 35 years, I believe that we need a chance to work things out and an honest chance, and that he needs to commit to giving us a chance.
Okay, what do you want to say to him about yourself with that?
That I am here. I have not walked away from him.
Okay.
I want to save the marriage. I believe that we can make the marriage stronger and better. And
okay, so you're saying you value your relationship with him?
Yes, very much.
And you wish that he would value his relationship with you, but it doesn't appear that that's happening.
Right.
And
I believe he's so confused.
What would happen if you'd say to him, is that the kind of person that you really want to be? I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder if you're being the kind of person that you really want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And just,
I know I've already suggested he's having a midlife crisis, and I sent him articles about it, and it seemed to make a difference to him. But then he just slid back into the affair, and he's continuing on with that right now.
Okay, so he's waffling all over the place.
Yes, he is.
Okay, so when he waffles, what you do is you look at one waffle, okay? So a part of you wants to be with me. Then you look at the other side of the waffle and say, seems like you don't want to be with me, or you want to be with someone else.
Right.
And then you say, well, how do you manage all that tension in your life? I wonder.
You drink.
Okay, so.
Although he just stopped drinking, and I already see a huge difference
okay.
in him.
So he medicated himself to get away from his familiar position, but there's a part of him that knows that he wants to be the kind of person that he really wants to be.
Yes.
And you can affirm that.
Yes.
Okay, good. Good. All right, is this helpful?
Yes, it is.
Okay, anything else? Any other chunk of this that you want to talk about?
Just the fact that he really has kind of abandoned the kids. The kids are older. They're 27 and 30, but he really has not much to do with them, and he hasn't spoken to my younger son since Christmas.
Okay.
He's never explained to them what happened or why he's acting the way he's acting.
Okay. Is that
and that in itself is very hurtful.
Is that the kind of father that he wants to be?
I'm sure it's not.
Have you asked
that? I should ask.
Hey,
yeah, I will.
The kind of father you want to be? Is this the kind of man you want to be? You know? What's it like
yeah.
for you when you cut yourself off from your kids? Holy crap. I can't do that. I wonder what it's like for you. Holy smokes.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what's under, what, you know, you say, I wonder what's underneath this for you. There's a part yeah. of him, there's part of him that wants to do this, and yet once he does it, he'll probably back away from you. That's very common. He'll move close. He'll let you in on a little bit of his world, but then when he gets some of it out there, he'll just the next day he'll shut down.
Yeah,
scares him. Intimacy scares him.
Yes.
Okay.
And I know he hasn't spoken to my son because he's embarrassed and ashamed.
Oh,
he has said that.
All right. So there's a whole issue of shame and guilt here. All right. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Jane. Has this been helpful?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, good, good. They've cut her off. Okay, Greg says, same with my wife. Martin said, mine abandoned our five kids, three of which are hers from our previous marriage. All five live with me. Okay. Some issues maybe with mothering there. Lori says, hi, my husband is doing all the right things, but I can't get the thoughts and images out of my mind. Okay, I'm obsessed with the details of the affair, so I've been unable to move forward. These thoughts are almost constant. Okay, Lori, briefly, often when you discover the affair, you have a need to know the details. And the need to know the details is an attempt to go back and justify the fact that you really, really knew that there was an intuitive part of you that knew that something was up, but you didn't dare say it, or you didn't dare even think it, or you didn't dare even feel it. So now that you know, you need to go back and say, oh yeah, I remember at such and such a time that such and such thing happened. I was right on target. So it's a self-affirmation that you're kind of looking for, that, yeah, I am not crazy. You know, I'm not crazy. I do know some things. Okay. Or the details of the affair, you may be thinking about their sexual relationship and what that was like. And when you do that, you may say to yourself, what does this mean to me? What does this mean to me that I'm thinking about this? What issues within me need healing or I would like to address? Okay. Okay, hope that's helpful. Okay, Jay says, my wife has sexual abuse when younger by family members. Two affairs later, I struggle with trust, lack of remorse. Sometimes she tries, other times she's like she gets over it in a nutshell. Okay, yeah, sexual abuse. I have a colleague, not kind of a colleague guy, who has worked with a lot of people, and he believes that up to 80% of our 80% of us have had sexual abuse at one form or another growing up. That sounds like a high number, but it's often I run into it a great deal. And when someone's sexually abused, they take that familiar position again into their marriage, into their relationship, and play it out. I had a woman who was sexually abused when she was a little girl. And some morning she would wake up and she'd go out and touch the hood of her car to see if it was warm or not, because she had so compartmentalized her life and tried to push that pain away, that she was so detached from it that a part of her at night would go and act out, probably. She didn't know. She didn't remember. She had no recollection of that, and yet she kind of knew that she did that, so she'd have to check to see if her car was warm in the morning. That's the power that some of this has, and it can be really, really difficult. Okay. Okay, a lot of questions here. I'm not sure. Okay, Jen says, husband's going out of town. I plan to ask him for a commitment, not to communicate with the other person while away. We're definitely in a couple four times, not to work on the relationship. Yeah, Jen says, should I hold my tongue? Yeah, yeah. When you try to get something from a cheating spouse, you're often playing into their familiar position. And backing off is a good experiment. Let me put it that way. Many of us are afraid to back off because we're afraid we're going to lose everything, you know? And we believe that by trying to work on this, we're going to make it better. And it really often, 90% of the time, does not make it better. It just makes it worse. And it may not make it worse, but it's not helping anything because you're just repeating some of the old stuff. And you're reinforcing in your cheating spouse's mind their perception of you. It may not be true, but you're reinforcing that perception. So it's often really, really good to back off. That's why in my boot camp and in the quick marriage turnaround, I talk about charging neutral, which is basically backing off, about not pursuing. Yeah, those two things are really, really important. And experiment with it for 2 days. If you really feel like you have to get in there and work on this and try and get something out of them, call a halt to it for 2 days or a week and see what happens. You don't have to do it forever, but just give it a whirl. Okay. All right. I think we're going to kind of, one more thing, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to give me some feedback about this course, this class here. Can you type in the chat area how this has been helpful or what was the main takeaway that you had tonight? Or if there's any way that I could improve it. Can you give me some feedback right now? I would really, really appreciate it. I know there's a lot of stuff hanging out there, and that's okay. We'll continue to work on it. I usually say to people it takes, 2 to 4 years for people to move through infidelity without this kind of stuff, and maybe 8 to 14, 16, 18 months if you really do recovery thinking rather than affair thinking. Okay. Missy, knowing how to stop reinforcing the familiar position was really helpful. Good. Yeah, that's really an important one. Yeah. Okay. Would appreciate a little bit more on explaining it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot more to explain here. I went over some basic skeletal principles tonight and ideas. So there's a lot more to this. There's all kinds of things lurking underneath the surface here that we can address. I'm going to run some more classes because I think there's a lot more I want to give. Jen, I really need direct specific help. Sometimes I can't give that in this format, you understand. I was able to with Jane tonight a little bit, but again, that's just a little bit. If you want really specific information and specific help, I suggest you check out my coaching packages. That's where we really dig into stuff and look at different strategies and different ways of wording things and different ways of looking at things that prove very, very helpful, and it really accelerates the healing process. Okay, charging tips on charging neutral. No, okay. So charging neutral, so far I've been failing at that, says Jen. Charging neutral sounds easy, but it's not. It's not merely backing off. It's not merely distancing. There's a lot of power to it, but it's something that it's taken me a lifetime to learn as well. Okay, I want to thank all of you for being here. And next Thursday night, same time, we're going to go through the items that we talked about that I mentioned earlier. So keep working on this, keep thinking about this, do your scorecard, and I'll talk to you. Oh, Lori, I mailed you twice to schedule private sessions but never got a response. Lori, I don't know what happened to that, but I am usually up on that. Maybe I didn't get your email. Lori, send me an email, if not tonight, tomorrow, okay, with your email address, and I'll check that out. I'll look at that. Sorry, Lori. I don't know what happened, but I don't really think I didn't do that intentionally, because I try to and I do respond quickly. Okay, are you available for now for a call? No, I'm not, Martin. I'm sorry. I got things on my agenda here for tonight. Go to my website, infidelityrecoverycenter.com, or drop me an email, bob@bobheisinger.com, in terms of what you would like, and I'll respond for those of you who want a little bit more. Okay? That's the best that I can do right now. All right. Okay, one more thing. Martin says, I'm in Australia. Time difference is an issue. I've Skyped with people in Australia, Martin, so we could work something out if you want to do that. All right. Good night, everyone. Peace to you. Love you all. Bye now.